Hello, Coven. Welcome to the Wisham Kitchen Podcast. My name is Britt, and I'm your host, and thank you so much for tuning in this week. So, I am enjoying my time at home for the time being. I got laid off after I put in my 2 weeks. So, yeah. Welcome to Florida. But anyway, I'm just trying to enjoy the time that I have to just relax at home until I start my new job on Monday. So I figured I would get some pre-recording done and try to be productive with my time off in between resting periods. But today I wanted to talk about an incident that occurred last week. After I got some really kind of troubling feedback from other witchy friends who believe that I may have stepped into a portal or something, I don't know, but it's a very odd experience that I had, and I just wanted to share it with you guys. So, just a little bit of background. I think I've talked about where I live, in prior episodes, but if this is your first episode listening, welcome. But I live right on the edge, like literally the property line backs up to a state forest here in Florida. And I couldn't really find any validated articles or stories of anything paranormal happening where I live, but there are local rumors that, trigger warning, a girl was viciously tortured and murdered in these woods, and her body was left in an abandoned cabin. But I can't find any articles on this either, so it might just be a folk tale, or it happened a lot longer ago than the legend states. The legend says that it happened back in like the 90s, but I couldn't find any articles on that. But anyway, that's really the only thing that I could find specifically about the area in which I live. There's plenty of haunted forests in Florida, and I would love to talk more about them in another episode, but this one appears to not technically be haunted, but my experience says otherwise. Because Hecate herself came down and told me that I needed to get the fuck out of there, that I wasn't ready to experience what was there, and that I needed to come back at a later time. I also got a tick on me, which, ew. But anyway, if you want to hear about my interesting experience, as well as the feedback that I heard from some other witch friends, then sit back, relax. Grab yourself a snack, cuddle up in a blanket. It's Halloween in April, y'all. So just stay tuned if you want to hear more.
Hey, Coven, real quick. So I just wanted to run this by you. If you have a business that you think the rest of the Coven would like to know about, and it doesn't have to be a witchy business, it could be really any business, but if you would like to advertise on the show, I am super open to that. It would be a super small fee, like single digits per episode, so just hit me up. You can email me at witchinkitchenpodcast@gmail.com, or you can message me on Instagram. That's my most active social media platform, and that's at the Witchin' Kitchen Podcast. But, you know, let's talk. Hit me up. All right, back to the show.
Okay, so this experience happened on Thursday afternoon. Yeah, it was afternoon. My boyfriend, he works from home, but he actually had to go to a neighboring farm to fix some farm equipment. So I was at home by myself. I was bored, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm going to go for a walk in the woods. It's been a while since I've taken a walk. And usually my walks are fairly short, but, you know, it was only like 3 in the afternoon. It was really nice out. I just needed a light jacket. It was nice and sunny and the birds were singing and everything was, you know, picturesque, to say the least. I connected with a tree, which is the first time that's ever happened to me. Like, I was just super drawn to this tree, and I put my hands on it, and it was just really calming. And I understand now why people do that. It was a really nice experience, and that was right at where the trail starts. So I have to walk a couple hundred yards, I'd say, from the back of my house to where the actual state forest trail starts. And it's a public trail. Like, I'm not doing anything wrong being out on that trail. It's open to the public, and people also ride their horses on this trail. So they have, it's a walking path and a horse trail. So you can do either or both on this trail. But the horse people can really be dicks about it if you're just walking back there. Like, they make it like, oh, you're gonna scare my horse. Like, if your horse gets scared by me, girlfriend, your horse is the one that needs to chill out, okay? Like, I am of no threat to anyone, let alone a horse. One that could literally kick me into oblivion. But anyway, I digress. So, I'm on this trail, and after I had my little moment with the tree, it was very nice and pleasant, and I was just like, yes, like, today is gonna be a good day. And I should have known not to say that, because with my luck, that's usually things turn out to be the opposite whenever I'm too enthusiastic about the day. Is anybody else like that? Like, where if you're too enthusiastic and you don't read the energy of the room, you end up being severely disappointed? That's me. So, I try to just have no expectations for the day. That way, if anything positive happens, then at least something positive happened. But I don't know if that's a healthy coping mechanism or not. I'm still working through that myself. But anyway, so I go up the trail, and there's nobody out there. It's just me. There's a nice gentle breeze blowing. It's sunny. I just feel almost euphoric. Like, I'm just in a great mood right then. And I should have known that should have been like a warning sign. Like, hey, maybe turn around and go home now. And I went in a different direction than I usually do. So, like, whenever I get to the trail, I usually go to the left and then around the loop. But this time I went to the right because I'd never gone really that far down the right. So I went to the right this time, and I went further than I would usually go, and I came across a fork in the road, a three-way crossway, like where you're supposed to leave offerings for Hecate. And so I sat where the paths diverged. I didn't go down either side yet, but I just reached out to her and I said, hey, how you doing? I'm just here chilling. So I was just, you know, talking with her, and I felt her presence, and she was there, and she was, you know, like, oh, you know, hey, how you doing? Everything's good. Like, yeah, like, let's chill, let's chat, whatever. And so I kind of just in my head was like, okay, which side of the trail should I go down, like left or right? And so I picked the right because I was like, you know what, screw it. I'm right-handed. I'll go down to the right. That was my logic. So I went down the right, and everything was nice still. It was very pleasant. There was a controlled burn back there not too long ago, which, again, red flag. And there were some really cool, like, pieces of, like, burnt wood, and it almost looked like a piece of tourmaline, which I know is obviously not tourmaline, but, like, it was still cool looking, and it was all shiny, and it was just neat. You know, it was neat back there. And then I walk a little bit further, and I come across a fallen tree. And what was weird about this tree is that the ends still looked very much alive. honestly, the tree still looked alive, but it was obviously fallen, and it was obviously a dead tree. But it looked really lifelike, or like it looked like it was still living, like on the ground. Again, that should have been another red flag, but my dumb white bitch ass decides to cross the tree line. So I literally just, you know, have to hop, skip, and jump over this big tree trunk, which I didn't take pictures of that. I took a picture of the actual, where the path diverges. So you'll see that on the Instagram. But, so I cross over the tree, and everything just changes instantly, like instantaneous change. It got colder, and I started like seeing shimmers in the air. I'm trying to describe it without sounding like a total lunatic, but everything was just shimmery. It was like I was tripping on something, which I know that I wasn't. I know that I didn't ingest anything. I didn't touch anything. I didn't touch any fungus on the sides of any of the trees. Like, I was really careful about that. I, like, really didn't stray off the path much. But I was hearing, like, little whispers, like, type whispers, like, all around me. And I kept walking. I don't know why I didn't turn around after that point, but I kept walking, and it started getting darker, and then I started seeing, like, things in my periphery, and I kind of started feeling uneasy, and I'm like, oh, no, I think I stumbled into something. And that's when I physically saw Hecate, and she doesn't do that very often unless it's something that I really need to pay attention to. It happened the first time that I actually made contact with her, I saw her. There was another time when she was warning me about a very toxic person, and she was like, you need to cut ties with this person, and I did after that. And then there was this time. So really, this is the third time that she's ever actually physically came to me and was like, okay, you've gone far enough. You need to turn around now. You need to go back home. She said, and I don't mean stop. Don't pass go. Don't collect $300. You fucking go home. Like, don't even stop. Just go home. So I listened. When I didn't listen to my fucking instincts, I at least listened to her, right? So she told me to go home, and I kind of obeyed. I stopped to pick up a cool leaf, and then I ended up just dropping it anyway because I was just like, I really should listen. But the whole time that I was coming back home, I felt like I was being watched. Like, there was something following me. And I was hearing creaks all around me. I was hearing what sounded like other footsteps around me. I was hearing knocks on the trees, which, like, you know, wood on wood knocks, which are usually akin to Bigfoot, but or Sasquatches, but that, I don't think that was the case in that instance. It was just really, honestly horrifying. I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. So I started jogging up the path instead of just walking, and I finally made it home. Granted, I'm still seeing shimmers and stuff, but the second that I passed my property line, which is where my wards start, it stopped. Everything stopped. Everything turned back to normal. It started getting lighter again. The shimmers stopped. I quit hearing things. But it was really horrifying, honestly. The whole experience, I was so scared because I had never had a problem with nature spirits, or some people may call them fae. I call them nature spirits because they just seem different. I feel like they connect more so with my Seminole roots than anything. I feel very connected to those roots whenever I'm communing with them. So that's why I feel like they're more of like the Native American interpretation of nature spirits. But anyway, so I get inside and my boyfriend's back. I didn't realize it had been that long. I'd been out there almost 2 hours. It did not feel that long. Like, I definitely got stuck in some sort of time loop, portal, area type thing. It was very odd. But whenever I came inside, my boyfriend looks at me and he's like, babe, your pupils are like dilated. Like, are you okay? And I was just like, yeah, I'm fine. Like, whatever. Like, I think I'm just dehydrated and like the heat got to me, blah, blah. Cause I'm not going to tell him about this shit. Okay. He would think that I was absolutely insane if I said anything about this to him. But of course I talked to, my friend Julia, who is the co-host of Witchcast, and my friend Alana, who's the other co-host of Witchcast. And I talked to them, and Julia, she can remote view. So she was able to see this thing that was actually following me and got up to the wards but couldn't get past them. And she said, it doesn't feel harmful, but it's very curious. And she described it as very tall, dark in appearance, and has like sapphire blue eyes. Like the face is kind of sunken in. It's like humanoid. And just based off of like the other noises and things that I was hearing, she was like, it could potentially be like some kind of shape-shifting entity. I don't know for sure, is what she said. And then I spoke with Alana and I gave her the same description and she was like, oh, that sounds like a Winnebago. And I'm like, no. So, in light of that, I'm going to be talking about shape-shifting Winnebago entities so you can understand what I might be potentially dealing with. And maybe if anyone has any experience with Winnebagos or, I hate to say it, skinwalker type things, like shape-shifting type things, please let me know. Please DM me on whatever social channel. I don't care. Just, you can email me. Just let me know what you think this is, like if this aligns with what you feel it might be, because I'm honestly kind of scared. So, anyway, here's some information about Winnebagos and shape-shifting entities. I need to correct myself. I said Winnebago. I meant Wendigo. It's embarrassing how many times I made the same mistake, but that's okay. You know what? That's what life is about, right? Yeah, you make mistakes, but then you work through them. So, a Wendigo. The more that I did research, the less I believed it really was a Wendigo. Even though the physical description matches, it didn't give off the vibe of a Wendigo. So what is a Wendigo? It is, I just found a cat's claw. Aw, one of my cat's little claws came out. It's just a shedding, but oh my god, those are so good in magic. Anyway, I don't hardly ever see them. My cat will eat his claw sheds. Is that weird? Is that something that your cats do? If you have a cat, please let me know. But anyway, Wendigos are a mythological creature from the First Nations Indians, specifically the Algonquin tribes. And they are along the eastern coast of Canada. They're in the Great Plains region of the States, and they're in the Great Lakes region of the States. So the, I visited the Seneca Nation whenever I was in New York in Thanksgiving. That's where we went to, just check out their offerings. They're really cool. They're a very nice group of people, the Seneca Nation, so shout out to anybody that's from the Seneca Reservation, or if you live near there, y'all are cool. But the Algonquins were near the Senecas. I believe that the Senecas may be part of the Algonquin. I don't know if that's right, so don't quote me on that. I believe that's what my boyfriend said, but I don't know if that's true. So anyway, the Wendigo is a humanoid malevolent spirit
who possesses people and then eats other humans. And sometimes they have antlers or horns as well, and they're kind of like an amalgamation of a deer and a man, kind of like Cernunnos, or another horned deity is kind of how they are represented sometimes, but other times they're just kind of like a zombie, really. But they're a spirit that possesses people and then eats other people. It's actually a medical term, Wendigo psychosis, where you have a sudden and intense craving for human flesh. I can't say that I've ever experienced Wendigo psychosis, but there is a name for it. I mean, there's a name for everything nowadays, isn't there? Which is good, but anyway. But yeah, it didn't give off that vibe. It wasn't malevolent. It really just felt curious. And the more that I looked into local lore, specifically Seminole lore, the more that seemed to fit. I did an episode a while back on Seminole folklore and Seminole magic. I didn't really go too much into the shamanistic aspects, because there's not a lot of public information about it, and I don't have enough in my genealogy. I don't have enough Seminole in my genealogy to actually go to a tribal council and learn that from them. However, I am descended from the Panther clan of the Florida Seminoles, and those people in that clan would have been the ones who would have been the tribal leaders and the elders who would have practiced medicine and would have been the, you know, medicine men and women of the village. But there is a documented occurrence in the Timucuan tribe. And the Timucuans were in Florida before the Seminoles came. They were the first natives to inhabit the land. The Seminoles came down a few hundred years after the Timucuans, and the Timucuans officially died out, or they integrated into the Creeks / Seminoles by the 1700s. They were totally acclimated. But the Timucuans recorded a great battle between their fiercest warrior and a great nature spirit. And it's at the Crystal River Mound. And without giving away my precise location, it's not that far from here. So, I'm in the area where this great battle would have been against this great nature spirit. And the battle ended with the Timucuans retreating the area. But the Seminoles had better relations with the nature spirits than the Timucuans, from what I have read. And I believe that what this thing was that had followed me was just a nature spirit, because it didn't seem malevolent, even though the physical description's kind of scary. And the experience was scary. It wasn't because I genuinely felt like I was in danger. It was just a new experience. Anytime that you're out of your comfort zone, especially with the spiritual realm or the paranormal, you're gonna feel fucking scared, okay? Like, I was scared shitless, from this experience. But now that I have a little bit of research under my belt, the next time that I go that far down the path, I will have a protective charm. I will make sure that Hecate is with me when I go. Granted, I know that she will come if I'm in an area where I shouldn't be yet. But now that I have an understanding, I'll also bring an offering next time that I go into that part of the woods, because I, A, don't want to be disrespectful, but B, I would also like to establish a relationship with the nature spirits. I kind of already have a little bit of a relationship. It's been a while since I've left them something, so I'm going to be doing that today. Just while I am here at home before I start my new job, I'm going to do more work with that. And I am going to, try to work on that relationship before I get back into the swing of things with work and I don't have as much time to do witchy things as I do now. So, that was the episode. I hope you enjoyed my harrowing tale into the woods. I had a good time researching this, and I know that the nature spirits out here aren't malevolent unless you make them malevolent, as with any other nature spirit. Kitty, go away. Go. Go, go, go. Go. But anyway, thanks so much for listening. I will, I don't know what recipe I'll put for this one. I'll find something, but stay tuned for that. Thanks again for listening. Have a great rest of your week, and I'll catch you on the next episode. Bye. All right, listen up, sluts, and I mean that in the best way possible. Today's recipe is for Sicilian bracciole. Now, if you're unfamiliar with bracciole, if you've ever had a pinwheel steak, it's kind of like that. It's got rolled up, it's meat very thinly pounded to where it's like super, super thin, like eighth of an inch thick thin, if you know what I mean. Very thin meat that's pounded, and then you put like a breadcrumb, cheese and onion type mixture into it, and then you roll it up and secure it with butcher's twine, and then you simmer it in a marinara blend for like 4 hours total. And I'll give you, of course, all the rundowns and stuff. And then you serve it on top of a long pasta of your choice. Typically it's spaghetti, but if you have angel hair or linguine, that will also work fine. So you will need a half a cup of Italian-style breadcrumbs, a cup of Parmesan cheese. Don't you dare get that Kraft stuff either. Don't you get that sawdust. You get the good shit for this, all right? You need a half a cup of grated mozzarella or provolone cheese. It doesn't matter. I'll even split it down the middle depending on how much I have and use quarter cup mozzarella and quarter cup provolone, but it's up to you. You'll also need some parsley. However much you want. I use just like a couple handfuls of fresh, or if I do the dry, I'll do like a few tablespoons of the parsley. Then you'll need a quarter cup of toasted pine nuts. You can rough crush them if you want. It's traditional that you keep them whole, but it really doesn't matter. Then you'll need a few tablespoons of olive oil, probably like 4 or 5 total. Salt and pepper to taste for everything. An onion diced. 6 cloves of garlic minced. A big pinch of red pepper flakes. 2 tablespoons of fresh basil, or you can use dried. You'll also need 1.5 pounds of bracciole. You can also just use flake steak if you don't have a specific meat store, like a specific butcher where you can go and ask for bracciole meat. You can use a flake steak and just pound it really thin. You'll also need 1/2 cup of dry white wine, or you can use a red wine. I use both interchangeably, just depending on what I have on hand. Traditionally, you use white wine with the pine nuts, but honestly, both taste really good. Then you'll need 3 cups of marinara, and then whatever long pasta you decide to use, cooked al dente. So you're going to mix those first 5 ingredients together, so the breadcrumbs, the cheeses, the parsley, and the toasted pine nuts, salt and pepper it, and then add like a couple tablespoons of olive oil, just mix it really well together, and then set that aside. Then you're going to heat your skillet with a little bit of olive oil, and then add your onion and saute for about 5 minutes. Then you're going to add your garlic and your pepper flakes, saute again for another couple of minutes, then remove from the heat. Add your basil, because you don't want it to be too cooked at this point. And then salt and pepper to taste. Then you're going to combine that with your breadcrumb mixture. Then you're going to lay your bracciole, your meat, on a thin surface. And if it's not already been pounded, go ahead and give that a good whack with a meat mallet until it's about 1/8 of an inch thick. Like, you want it really, really thin, because that's the key to cooking it and getting it tender.
Then you're going to sprinkle a layer of your breadcrumb and onion mixture evenly over the top. Kind of like whenever you're making cinnamon rolls, just leave a little bit of the outer edges uncovered. And then you're going to roll it up again like a cinnamon roll. And you're going to secure it with butcher's twine. Start in the middle and then work your way out. That'll be your best bet to keep all the filling in. Then you're going to season around the meat with salt and pepper. I also like to use a little bit of Italian seasoning because I always have that on hand. If you don't, it's fine. Just generously season with your salt and pepper. Then you're going to brown your meat roll on all sides in a heavy Dutch oven over medium heat. That'll take about 5-10 minutes, just depending on your oven and your Dutch oven. Then you're going to remove your meat from the pan, and then you're going to add your wine to just get the bits off of the bottom. I personally like to cook the onion mixture and everything in that Dutch oven instead of in a skillet. But, you know, you can do it however you want. It just saves dishes for me. I consider it like a one-pot meal almost. Then you're going to add your marinara, bring it to a boil, then you're going to reduce your heat, add your meat in there, and then you're going to cover and simmer for about 2 hours, and you're going to turn your meat and baste it every 30 minutes with the sauce. So you're just going to, you know, roll it over, baste with your sauce, cover again. Check it every now and then. Don't let it, check it every like 15 minutes or so, but like baste it every 30. Then you're going to uncover it completely and then cook for another 2 hours on low heat. That's going to just help the sauce reduce, and it's going to just be mwah, beautiful. Then you're going to serve it over your long pasta of choice. You can cut it up into however many sections you need. You can also use multiple rolls of meat. You can cut it from the beginning if you want to do that. Typically it's cut after, but it's up to you. Cut it up into, I would say, 6 servings for a 1.5-pound slab, cut really thin. 4 to 6, depending on how big of a portion of meat you want and how big of a pasta serving you have. But really, it's great as leftovers. It's even better the next day when you let it sit in the marinara overnight in the fridge. Oh, it's so good. But yeah. There you have it, Sicilian style bracciole. Now every Italian's gonna give you a different mixture for the middle. That's just the most common one that I've heard. That's also the one that I was taught to use. So I hope you enjoy. I just realized that the New York accent came out a little bit while I was recording this. So also, if you hear my dryer in the background, I'm sorry about that. I'll try to hopefully I talked loud enough to cover it, but if not, sorry. Anyway, I hope you have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you on the next one. Much love and manja to everyone. Bye. For listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed, and if you'd like, you can check out the website at witchinkitchenpod.com. You can follow the show on Facebook at witchinkitchenpod. You can follow the show on Instagram at the Witching Kitchen Podcast. You can follow the show on Twitter at witchkitchenpod, or you can send me an email at witchingkitchenpodcast@gmail.com. And please don't forget to rate and review the show on the Facebook page, or you can go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much, and have a magical rest of your day.